The Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Terry. On today's show, Dorothy Barnett, Executive Director of the Climate Plus Energy Project, joins hosts Brent Ragsdale and Dave Bennett Freeling to talk about the climate and energy-related legislation in Kansas. We will play clips from the Clean Energy Business Council's third annual policy summit that took place January 16th this year, and from Wealth Day, which was February 10th. But first, the environmental news for the week of March 16th. Democracy Now! Reports, United Nations researchers warned that polar ice caps are melting six times faster than they were in the 1990s, threatening sea level rise that will displace hundreds of millions of people by the end of the century. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says ice loss data from Greenland and Antarctica is in line with some of the most pessimistic predictions of climate change, and that even if global carbon emissions were somehow halted today, Arctic ice would continue to melt for another three decades. The Center for Biological Diversity reports the recently released annual count of monarch butterflies overwintering in Mexico shows a decrease of 53% from last year's count, and that is well below the threshold at which government scientists predict the migration could collapse. The count was conducted by World Wildlife Fund Mexico. Scientists were expecting the count to be down slightly, but this level of decrease is heartbreaking, said a senior scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity. In 2014, conservationists petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to protect the butterfly under the Endangered Species Act. The decision on Endangered Species Act protection will be issued in December of this year under a settlement with the conservation groups. This year's low count reinforces the need to protect the monarch butterfly. The latest population decrease is attributable to poor weather conditions during the spring and fall migrations. Monarchs have lost an estimated 165 million acres of breeding habitat in the United States to herbicide spraying and development. Monarch caterpillars only eat milkweed, but the plant has been devastated by increased herbicide spraying in conjunction with corn and soybean crops that have been genetically engineered to tolerate direct spraying with herbicides. About 99% of all North American monarchs migrate each winter to forests on 12 mountaintops in central Mexico. Monarch butterflies west of the Rocky Mountains overwinter on the coast of California. Their most recent numbers were down. Climate change threatens to disrupt the monarch's migration and render its overwintering habitats unsuitable by the end of this century. Associated Press reports, the United States Army Corps of Engineers has reached its goal of restoring the Missouri River mainstream levee system to its full height following flooding during 2019 that devastated areas of Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri. There's still more work to be done, but crews have closed 24 breaches along the main river system. While levees have been restored to their full elevation, the work will not be considered fully restored until grass can take root in warmer weather. The grass will help stymie erosion. Now, our show.
Good evening and welcome to Eco Radio KC. I'm Brent Ragsdale along with co-host Dave Bennett Freeling. Hi, Dave.
How are you doing?
Tonight, we're going to visit with Dorothy Barnett, the Executive Director of the Climate and Energy Project, about what's happening in this year's Kansas legislative session. Specifically with regard to the prospects for Kansas having a new comprehensive energy plan or not, which is something that Dorothy Barnett has really been championing along with the other groups that she works with. But like KKFI, the Climate and Energy Project is doing what they can to slow the spread of this coronavirus outbreak, and so Dorothy is not going to be in the studio with us tonight. She is going to be calling in from her phone.
She's a valuable asset to the
state. She is a valuable asset.
So we want to keep her safe.
Exactly. And I encourage everybody else to do your part as well. Okay. So first, before Dorothy calls in, and she's going to call in about 20 minutes, we are going to play some pre-recorded audio that I recorded at a couple of the Climate and Energy Project's events. they had their third annual policy summit for their group that is called the Clean Energy Business Council. And that was held in Topeka on January 16th, which was right at the beginning of the start of the session. And so we're going to hear Dorothy Barnett's opening remarks, and then we're going to hear Jessica Lucas go over the CEBC's Kansas legislative priorities for this session. So without further ado, take it away, Dave.
Well, hello, everybody. Thank you all for joining us for the third annual Clean Energy Business Council Policy Summit. The Climate Energy Project is a 12-year-old statewide nonprofit focused on advancing clean energy solutions to benefit both the environment and the economy. We work with partners to elevate the connections between climate change and public health, provide education and outreach around clean energy technologies like wind and solar. We provide education and outreach. We work for policy solutions at the State House, and we also intervene from time to time at the Kansas Corporation Commission. The Clean Energy Business Council has been around for three and a half years, and the council is made up of both businesses and organizations who support the transition to the clean energy economy. This diverse group represents a variety of clean energy industries, including, as I mentioned, renewable energy, but also energy efficiency, lighting, manufacturing, electric supply, engineering, chambers, local advocacy organizations, as well as many others. Our discussion today will outline the Clean Energy Business Council's legislative priorities, and so we're really excited to have our elected officials here to hear more about the clean energy economy and get a better sense of where we think the future is going as it relates to clean energy. We have a great number of really great speakers who are going to talk about kind of where we are today, what the opportunities are that we could be moving toward. It was certainly our pleasure as the membership earlier today to meet with Secretary of Commerce David Tolan, who really has a great vision for Kansas and is really sees the value in the clean energy economy and has some really great ideas of ways to see the administration help move that forward. So, as I said, our discussion today is going to outline the council's legislative priorities. We're going to discuss a little bit about what we can do to remove barriers for both rooftop solar and electric vehicle charging stations. We're going to hear from the Missouri Public Council about a program that was recently passed as a pilot in Missouri to help finance energy efficiency upgrades. And we're super happy to welcome back Carousel Rinaldi from the Building Performance Association to share more about the recently released London Economic Studies take on energy efficiency and where Kansas has opportunities in that. This week, the KCC, for those of you who don't know, released phase one of the electricity study, which came out of last year's legislature. We'll be digging into some of the recommendations that were made, including the need for a state energy plan. Later this afternoon, we're going to talk about that. I really want to highlight the transition that Kansas and both the nation is experiencing in terms of electricity generation. We have over 6,000 megawatts of wind as of just this year and just under 30 megawatts of solar. And for Kansas, renewable energy became the single largest source of generation. And let me say that again. So in 2018, just our state at that time was generating 34% from wind energy. We did 30% from coal and 24% from gas. So as a state, our largest generating source is now renewable energy, which is something to applaud, I think. On a national level, this week, the Energy Information Agency forecasted that by 2021, renewables will surpass coal energy nationwide and produce 24% of the United States' electricity overall. The transition to the clean energy economy is fully underway, and Kansas really is poised to lead that transition. So it's my pleasure now to introduce Jessica Lucas, who does government affairs for the Clean Energy Business Council, to talk a little bit about our legislative priorities. So please help me welcome Jessica.
Good afternoon. I am Jessica Lucas, the lobbyist for the Clean Energy Business Council, and I'm excited to be before you today to talk about our legislative and policy priorities as we enter the 2020 session. Our program, which does promise to have a lot of really informative, great information about where we can go for the future. Technology has enabled homeowners and businesses to improve the efficiency of their electric systems and lower their utility rates and energy usage. But we haven't removed, and many of you are aware of this, some of the policy and regulatory barriers that fully allow the adoption of these tools, limiting what Kansans can do to lower their electric bills in comparison to what our counterparts in other states can do, particularly Missouri, where we see just a lot of differences between what you can do in Missouri versus Kansas. We're going to talk today about a variety of tools that we can adopt through legislative action that will enable Kansans to decrease their energy use and save money in the process. Last year, we were here and we were talking about the importance of a statewide energy plan and independent energy office. As we said, then we're one of only three states where our state energy office is housed within the regulatory agency. We believe a state energy plan facilitated from the energy office is the best way to start the stakeholder process and navigate the direction of our energy future in regard to the rapid changes that are happening as we see more electric vehicles, energy-efficient building materials, cheaper and longer-lasting battery storage, and a host of financing tools that improve the affordability of advanced technologies we know people want to use. We're glad we were able to start that conversation and very much appreciated Governor Kelly's announcement in October that she will initiate an energy planning process this year. The need for a plan was further emphasized in the newly released phase one of the electric rate study that Dorothy has mentioned and which you'll hear more about today. There's no question that a broad collaboration among stakeholders to plan for our energy future is important. And we know that it's also going to come with some discomfort. All of us have ideas about where we're going, and some of that is steeped in the processes that we've been undergoing for many years, and some in visions of what's possible based on new ideas and technology. So I think it's really great that we're going to have an opportunity to all be together, collaborate, and discuss ideas and opportunities as we move to the future. It is important, though, to remember that even with an energy planning process being slated to happen, there is work that we need to do now. We can't afford to delay all of our action in regard to our energy future until the energy plan is established. So going into 2020, here's a few of our priorities. In regard to distributed generation, it's long been our belief that Kansans should have the right to generate and store renewable energy on the customer side of the meter without incurring penalties or discriminatory charges. We also support Kansas schools, hospitals, churches, and the military to enter into long-term social contracts with a third party to offset some of their electricity costs with self-generation. The Mays School District solar project is an excellent example of what's possible, and we need policies in place that will enable other school districts, hospitals, etc., to be able to capitalize on those on what basically what we've seen Mays do. Let's replicate that in other areas. Last year, we introduced the Energy Fairness Act, which protects Kansans and their right to manage their energy use in order to lower their bills, again, without penalty or discrimination. This arose as a need after the KCC approved Evergy's request to charge a demand charge on rooftop solar customers. After hearing compelling testimony against the demand charge as a rate-making tool, we were successful in getting Evergy to agree to grandfather in the customers who had already installed rooftop solar and then have their rate changed, putting their investment in jeopardy. We also spent the last half of 2019 in discussions with Evergy about alternative rate solutions that would satisfy all parties based on our concerns that the demand charge caused a rapid decline in residential solar installations across Kansas, while installments in Missouri skyrocketed because their state has more favorable policies in regard to the self-generation of electricity. I was really hopeful in August when we saw the first set of numbers from Evergy for a time-of-use rate, and I thought we might be able to find common ground and settle the issue without additional legislative action. But unfortunately, as the process continued, Evergy used an interpretation of revenue-neutral rate-making requirements that required more expensive rates than the numbers first presented. And so, in the end, the time-of-use rates that they would accept were four times higher than the number first presented, and certainly made, for those negotiations, a time-of-use rate option cost prohibitive. In the meantime, the Kansas Supreme Court heard arguments to determine if Evergy's rate design for distributed generation discriminates against rooftop solar customers. The justices asked thorough, thoughtful questions about the rate-making process and were hopeful they'll rule in favor of Kansans' right to install rooftop solar without being charged a penalty fee for doing so. How the court rules on this case is certainly important, but it doesn't mean the solution for improving our distributed generation policies rests at their feet. If we want to provide homeowners and small businesses with the right to use solar panels and battery storage on their property without onerous fees, it will take legislative action to ensure that. On this, I want to be clear. We are not asking for tax incentives or any kind of government handout. In Missouri, they do offer a rebate. Our solar installers here in Kansas feel very comfortable that they can compete without a rebate. They simply just want the handcuffs taken off, if you will. So we're asking the legislature to direct to the utilities in the KCC their expectation for solar and battery customers to install without discriminatory fees and penalties. In order to ensure all Kansas homeowners can install solar panels, the state would benefit as well from standardized connectivity, which is how the law is applied in Missouri. And you'll hear more about this as well in the next presentation. State law currently caps net metering at 1% of our energy generation, and we are not even halfway to that point. We believe it's important that we remove the handcuffs to rooftop solar generation and reassess our policies when we do get to that 1%. Returning to the net metering policies that were in place until 2014 is what we believe is one of the best ways to grow the rooftop solar industry and enable Kansans more options to self-generate, which we know so many want to do. Energy efficiency is another important focus of ours, and the policy opportunities here are plentiful. We've been working with the Citizens Utility Ratepayers Board, the Kansas Rural Center, Kansas Association for Community Action Programs, and Sierra Club on a path forward to enable access to energy efficiency programs and tools. We were an original supporter of the Kansas Energy Efficiency Investment Act, which was never fully approved by the KCC. This legislation was passed in 2014, and while we supported the bill then and certainly believe in energy efficiency investments, we believe that passing KEA as it was written then is not the best solution in 2020 to address our energy efficiency needs. A popular energy efficiency program that, again, is available in Missouri but not in Kansas is commercial PACE. PACE is an innovative financing structure that makes it possible for owners of commercial, industrial, and other non-residential properties to obtain low-cost, long-term financing for energy efficiency projects, water conservation, and renewable energy. Missouri has offered this since 2015, and just yesterday I got an update from their program that shows $47 million in commercial PACE financing, which has led to $52 million in energy savings and $225 million in economic impact. PACE projects are not jobs that can be outsourced or automated. Skilled tradesmen and women are working in our local communities to install solar panels, replace old and inefficient windows, and weatherize their businesses. It's a program that provides jobs in communities of all sizes and helps businesses better manage their energy costs, which is a key need in a state where we've seen a steady increase of our electric rates over the past decade. Another energy efficiency program that we think shows great promise is known as Pay As You Save. This is a system that enables building owners or tenants to purchase and install money-saving, resource-efficient measures with no upfront payment and no debt obligation. Again, this is something you're going to hear more about today. Evergy was just approved for a pilot pay-as-you-save program in their Missouri territory, and we'd like to see Kansas have those opportunities as well. Transportation is also a part of the clean energy age. As projections continue to show, we're going to see more and more electric vehicles in the market. But the challenge today is, how do you get across the state and keep your car charged? So we know that we need additional electrical vehicle charging stations, and there are solutions for 2020 to make this happen. Last, I want to address utility-scale wind and solar. Wind continues to be an important part of our state's energy generation and has been for more than a decade. And I don't think any of us in this room had the vision over a decade ago to think that we would be where we are today, and it's incredible, and we're grateful that we have had that growth. There's also increasing interest in utility-scale solar projects. So as we move forward as a state to support utility-scale projects, it again will take a collaborative effort of unified voices to make sure that these projects aren't stifled by misinformation, and there's a lot of misinformation that's churning out there, that we maintain fair siting guidelines, and we honor the environmental integrity of the areas where projects are being constructed. Renewable energy generation is a resource that will power our state for the next generation, and policies that support its adoption benefit us all. And I think this is particularly important as we think about the diversification and where we're going and the job opportunity in this sector. This past couple of weeks have been really hard in the South Central Kansas area, where many folks have lost their job or may lose their job in the aviation sector. And some are frustrated because they feel like this is an ongoing problem where it's kind of feast and famine in that industry, and the talk always comes about diversification. The clean energy sector is certainly an area where we can build on opportunities and grow the Kansas economy and hopefully recruit and retain some of our talent. We're educating men and women in Cloud County for solar and wind jobs, and we've got to make sure that we're doing work here. So that's what we'll be addressing today, is going deeper into the information that I've laid out before you. And so with that, again, like I said, I am going to head back to the Capitol for another engagement before I come back over. So I.
Okay, you're back with Eco Radio KC. Thanks for joining us. We just played some excerpts from an event that happened at the Capitol, the Kansas Capitol, on January 16th. That was a policy summit by the Clean Energy Business Council. So we are hopefully going to get Dorothy Barnett on the line. Can we try that, Dave?
Dorothy, are you there? Can you hear us, Dorothy?
Hi, Brent. I can hear you. Still getting that fast, busy signal in the background, but if your listeners can't hear it, then maybe we're okay to go.
I think and you can hear that on your phone there?
I can, yep.
You still hear it? Oh, it was gone there for a minute.
Yeah, I think as long as we're talking.
Like when you speak, it goes away, but as soon as no one's speaking, it comes back.
Okay. All right, that's odd.
Well, we'll press on while Dave tries to solve that. Hello, Dorothy. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me tonight, Brent.
All right. Were you able to hear what we played, that little excerpt from the policy summit?
I was. It brought back some happy memories.
Yeah, so frame that up. That happened right at the sort of the beginning of the Kansas legislative session this year. And we were all full of these great ideas of things we were hoping to accomplish around the environment. And then it seems like there's been a lot of roadblocks that have come up. Not least of which is this new darn pandemic that we're dealing with. And I know that the legislators are dealing with that too. So you might start by telling us, how did that go? How did their day go, and what's their plan?
Well, I wish I had news that the legislature was going to follow what 11 other states, including Nebraska and Colorado, have done, which is suspend their session. In light of the pandemic, President Trump's announcement today to try to avoid being around 10 or more people, And while we understand that the legislature must pass a budget, that's their key thing they must get done, there's a lot of other activity at the State House today as well. And according to what we're hearing from President of the Senate, Susan Weigel, she's planning on business as usual. We opted to not present our testimony for a hearing that's going to happen tomorrow in House Utilities on securitization. We're going to let our testimony stand as written testimony instead of face-to-face testimony. The Climate and Energy Project is taking the pandemic seriously and encouraging all of our staff to try to work from home as much as possible and not have face-to-face meetings that aren't absolutely necessary. So it's changed the way we work. So far, we haven't seen it change the way the Kansas legislature is working too much.
Well, I approve of what you're doing. I think you're doing the right thing, and I think they better think seriously about what they're doing, because if we overwhelm our healthcare system with a lot of sick people all at once, it's going to be really bad. So.
Yeah. You know, I will say that we were supposed to have a hearing tomorrow afternoon for the Kansas Energy Efficiency Investment Act, which was some legislation that we in the past had supported. But too many changes with that legislation this year that really was going to only benefit the utilities. We were going to have to present testimony tomorrow in opposition of that bill. And so that was a really hard decision for CEP to make as an organization who's been fighting hard for energy efficiency for more than a decade. But our hope is that through the energy planning process, through the state energy plan, we can come together with the utilities and with other stakeholders and try to find a compromise where they can provide energy efficiency and we can ensure that all Kansans can access the energy efficiency programs.
Okay. So it sounds like you are a little frustrated with the response for the governor's plan to come up with a new energy office and to separate that out. Talk about that. Talk about where we stand with that.
Yeah, so there are a couple of interesting things that popped up with the governor's executive reorganization order to move the Kansas Energy Office from the KCC to an independent office. You heard us talk about that on your segment just a little bit earlier. That's something that we've actually been talking about since before Governor Kelly was elected. And so we were, of course, really excited to hear her put forward the ERO. It became a political football, unfortunately. There was kind of the timing of the ERO was announced, and then we had opposition to the constitutional amendment on abortion. And the next thing we knew, the ERO for the Energy Office, as well as another ERO that the governor had put forward, were being pushed back on, not on the merits of the policies, but because of partisan politics. We went into a House Utilities meeting where the governor's staff was explaining the ERO. It was just supposed to be informational, and we very quickly saw a movement to pass a resolution out to the full House for an unfavorable recommendation on the ERO. And then we waited kind of on pins and needles for several days to see if the House was going to take that issue up. They have not yet. On the Senate side, we had a full hearing on the State Energy Office in Senate Utilities. The governor's staff was able to present on why they felt like we needed the Energy Office moved, which really was to stand up the office more robustly with expertise that could really manage the state energy planning process that the governor had announced last fall. And
they went ahead with it, and everything was great. We're going to pause here for just a minute. That's okay. Not what happened, actually. It hasn't been so smooth right after that. But we're going to hear more about that in just a moment. Thank you. And we're going to take a quick break.
Thanks.
¿Sabía que puede responder al censo 2020 por correo, teléfono o por internet? Aquellos que no hayan respondido en mayo serán visitados por un trabajador del censo. Los trabajadores oficiales del censo deben presentar una credencial de identificación con una foto. A su solicitud, deben proporcionar información de contacto del supervisor y pueden llevar una computadora portátil o una bolsa con el logotipo de la oficina del censo. Más información en census2020kc.org. Apoyo a KKFI proporcionado por Metro KC Census Equity Fund.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Studies show that people are happier, healthier, and more productive when they spend time in buildings that include elements of nature.
There are lots of different ways we can bring nature into the built environment. People think it just means bringing plants in there, but it could also be bringing water and daylight and natural breezes, the use of natural materials.
Bill Browning is a partner at Terrapin Bright Green, a sustainable building design firm. He says many of these features are also good for the climate. For example, when designing a building with nature in mind,
I'm really going to emphasize daylighting, where I can natural ventilation, both of which dramatically lower the energy use of the building if done well.
Browning says design can also make people more aware of local ecology. For example, his firm often uses reclaimed wood or rough-hewn stone that reflects a building's location. And carefully placed windows can encourage people to observe the changing seasons or butterflies visiting a pollinator garden.
So bringing these experiences of nature and tying you to those experiences of nature in the built environment hopefully helps you think differently about where you are.
And more connected to the environment outside your four walls. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Hello, everyone. We here at KKFI want to keep our listeners as informed and educated with the most current information as we can. So the website for the CDC is cdc.gov. That is the Center for Disease Control. And the phone number is 1-800-CDC-INFO. That's 1-800-232-4636. Again, that website is cdc.gov. You can also go to kkfi.org on the homepage. There's some downloads and information about local stuff there, too. Thank you, and stay safe out there. This is the public service of KKFI.
Okay, we're back with EcoRadio KC. Our guest on the line tonight is Dorothy Barnett, the executive director of the Climate and Energy Project. Dorothy, are you still there?
I am.
Great. Yeah, I think we've got our wire fixed that was causing us the problem earlier. So we should be able now to probably 10 tell or so. I have to be a little bit open since I don't have you here in front of me to give you hand signals.
Okay.
So, yeah, we wanted to get these things move forward for the environment, for energy transition, and a lot of other roadblocks came up. I understand
that. To Congress, I think that was the last we heard. That was the state Senate.
Yeah, we were talking about the state, the Senate, and the energy governor's ERO, Energy Reorganization Order, for the state energy office, moving it from the KCC to an independent office and that the governor would be in charge of. And really, in the Senate, we had a full hearing. There was no opposition to the ERO. Lots of positive recognition for the value of a staffed-up office that would manage the energy planning process for a state energy plan. And the the Senate Utilities Committee opted not to work that bill. They opted to just leave it be. So where it stands today is if no action is taken by the House or the Senate by the end of March, then the governor's ERO would automatically go into effect.
Oh, wow. Sounds good.
We did good. Just a couple of bills popped up in the last couple of days. One of them is a bill from the House Energy Committee, and that bill is it directs the KCC to create a state energy plan. Now, it doesn't really indicate much about whether they would be in charge of a state energy plan through the energy office if it doesn't move into the governor's office, or if the KCC, just the staff or the commission, would be responsible for creating a state energy plan. It lays out some things that should be included in the state energy planning process. And I would say, by and large, what we've seen doesn't give us pause. It takes into account transitioning to clean energy. It takes into account taking care of our own natural resources and in the environment. And so I just think there's some clarity around if they want the state, the KCC, to do the study, you know, does the energy office have a role or not? So that bill was just introduced today. We don't know if there will be time, given the calendar, given the coronavirus, to work that bill. But that is one bill about the state energy office that is hanging out there now. The Senate also passed a bill that would require whomever is selected to direct the state energy office by the governor, that they would have to pass Senate confirmation. That's a fairly unusual move. Traditionally, only cabinet positions have to pass Senate confirmation, and so the idea that you would have a state energy office director have to pass Senate confirmation is a little bit unusual. Again, we don't know, given the current coronavirus situation and the current shortness of time to get legislative business done, whether either of those bills will go anywhere. So in that respect, there's just some waiting and some watching.
Well, okay. Well, that's a good update. So let's talk a little bit about what we have accomplished this session. I think it was a pretty historic event that we finally broke through the barrier of talking about climate change in the state Capitol building. That happened on Wealth Day. Tell us about that climate hearing that we had.
I have to say, interestingly enough, we had to put together some information for one of our funders, one of the foundations that funds our work, for a call tomorrow. And as we were looking back on the last year and all of the exciting things that have happened and the work that we've been a part of, the climate hearing was one of the top three things that we highlighted to that funder. So for those of you who were unable to attend for the first time in the Kansas State House, although it was not a sanctioned climate hearing, we did have a bi-house, bipartisan committee that included several legislators from the House and the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats, along with some local elected officials. And a community representative and even an Episcopalian bishop. And they served as the committee, and we met in a committee room. And then we had a group of conferees talk about different aspects of climate change. We had a gentleman from NOAA come and talk about the science behind climate change and what Kansas can expect. We had our own Rachel Mislevy from the Climate and Energy Project talking about climate change and health. We had your own Richard Mabian talking about environmental justice. Modi Reber from Kansas Interfaith Action talking about the moral case for action, along with resiliency and adaptation. And myself talking about energy, transportation, and emission reduction strategies. And then we had Fred Yutzi, from the Land Institute talking about carbon farming and the role that agriculture can play as we think about both mitigation and adaptation for our agriculture economy moving forward.
And there's a link to that. Yeah, there's a link to that. If you want to hear that, if you go to our website, you can find the link to the YouTube video of the whole thing too. It's really good. But go on. Yeah, what happened?
Yeah. Well, the whole room was packed. People were sitting on the floor. They were sitting in legislators' chairs. People couldn't get in. That was one of the biggest complaints we heard from folks who attended Wealth Day, was they wished we had been in a bigger space, because they really wanted to come in and listen to the really dynamic both testimony that was given from the conferees, but also the really great questions from the committee. You know, our hope is that that started a dialogue, and that we will see more kind of sanctioned or official climate hearings next year. As we think about the future that we're facing, we're running out of time. We need to get moving on resiliency and mitigation and adaptation. And Kansas has lots of opportunity for all of those things, but we need to get together and have a plan on how we're going to get there.
Well, I was there. I was so impressed and pleased with the bipartisan support that we got. The committee chair was a Republican from Western Kansas, Don Heineman. I thought he did just an excellent job and was inclusive of everyone. And I think that in the short amount of time, a lot of great information was shared. The other thing that happened after that, because this happened at Wealth Day. Wealth Day is something that the Climate and Energy Project and other groups, I guess you call them your wealth leaders. How do you refer to that, Dorothy?
We call them our wealth partners.
Wealth partners.
And it's a part of the Wealth Coalition, and wealth stands for water, energy, air, land, transportation, and health.
Yes.
And it's a great event. I've been before, and I think that is open to the public, is it not?
It is. It is open to the public.
That's really
and this year, we had over 400 people attend.
Oh, that's
it was
wonderful.
Our largest Wealth Day ever.
And lots of students
as we reviewed the evaluations for folks that were able to attend, it was just a lot of positive feedback on the day, and our planning committee and our wealth partners are already meeting to think about what we can do better for next year, how we can make it a better event. In addition to the climate hearing and the large number of people that attended, we had over 50 high school students attend, and that was a super exciting part of the event this year, was so many young people interested in Kansas and what's happening on the climate and energy front moving forward.
Amen. Yeah.
So I was really impressed, Dorothy, by your talk after the hearing. There was kind of the press, the rally, the pep rally that we have every year at Wealth Day. And I was just really pleased with how direct and plain spoken you were about the climate emergency, and that you were able to speak that right out in the open there right in the Capitol building. Care to replicate any of that for us? I didn't get a recording of it. I was just getting ready to go talk to my senator, and I didn't run it. So,
well, I have to say that it was hard to not be enthusiastic with that many people inside the second floor rotunda. We were super lucky to have Senator Tom Fox, one of our state climate champions, talking about, you know, what he sees as the future for Kansas, And then to have Zach Tesora, lobbyist for the Sierra Club, get up and share their excitement to see everyone and what their concerns were. The thing that has been, I think really important for CEP to say, and for me as their executive director to say, is that sometimes it's hard to put on the brave face when you're talking about your private fears around the climate crisis. At CEP, we really do focus on public-facing optimism, in large part because our organizations we work with, we're so afraid that without that public-facing optimism, our fragile climate movement might completely fall apart. And so I think it's important for us to say that we all know there is no safe level of global warming, and that we have to keep our temperature increase below 1.5 degrees Celsius. One of the things we know about Kansas is that temperatures here have already risen about 2 degrees Fahrenheit since the beginning of the 20th century. And so even if we can keep our emissions below the business as usual case, our state's coldest years are still going to be about 2 degrees hotter. Under the higher emissions level, if we don't do anything differently, we're going to see 11 degrees warmer than the hottest year in our historical record. Including an additional 40 to 70 additional 100 degree days. Statistics show Kansas City is going to be one of the 5 most impacted cities from climate change in the future. And so I think that we know that this is happening, and we really have to think about how we build the political will and the power to implement the solutions that we know exist.
Well, Dorothy, I really appreciate you saying that on the air. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, we know that Kansas wind and solar energy efficiency are all things that we can do, that we should do. But we can't rely solely on those utility scale investments. We also have to add distributed resources. We have to figure out how to change the way rate making happens, where people are discouraged from putting rooftop solar on because they're charged more. We also have to close our remaining coal plants by 2030. There in Kansas City, Evergy made a big announcement that they were going to reduce their emissions 80% by 2050. But what we forgot to say was twofold. One, they've already reduced their emissions 40% by 2005. So it's hard for me to believe that it's going to take another, 20 years to reduce that other 40%. The other thing we know is that the scientists tell us, we can't keep those coal plants running the rest of their useful life, which is 2040 to 2050, according to Evergy. We have to close them sooner. We have to really transition to clean energy if we're going to have any hope of keeping us below the 1.5 degrees that we need to be.
Well, I think that my biggest hope comes from the fact that we did have so many engaged high school kids there. I think that they're going to keep us moving in the right direction. They're not going to allow us to not do the right thing for the environment. That's just my personal take on it. So Wealth Day, it seems like we wanted to concentrate on energy and transportation this year, the E and the T, but we ended up stuck on health, between the coronavirus getting us at the end, but also the Medicaid for All, or the Medicaid expansion, I guess, in Kansas, not Medicaid for All, but Medicaid expansion in Kansas issue, which turned out to be so contentious that blocked us from moving a lot of our energy things forward. But I think we have a lot of things to be encouraged about. I think this idea of actually being able to come up with an energy plan, yes, I think rightfully so, you present, and also Doug Kluke from NOAA presented that Kansas is going to be impacted, certainly, if we don't get our emissions down. But also, we have so much potential. We have done so much with wind, and we've barely touched the surface of solar. And I look at Kansas, I see all of the other things we could do, integrating with agriculture. We could be storing energy in the form of anhydrous ammonia. We could be making hydrogen for, you know, cross-country trucking. There's all kinds of great things that we should be leading the way on. So I applaud you and your group for all you're doing. How are we doing on time, Dave?
Certainly excited to be part of the transition that's taking place. Never imagined a decade ago that we'd see this kind of transformational change, and appreciate all of the support of folks like you all and the volunteers and the organizations across the state who are really working hard to take on climate change.
Yeah, it's great to hear about all this movement. There's just at our website, kkfi.org, if you just Google Eco Radio KC, it's easier to find. But if you look us up, we got some great links to that Wealth Day conference or the hearing, and then also some other links to find out more about what's happening at the state level on all kinds of things legislatively. So something to check out.
Yeah, I wanted to say that too. I've got another show, Dorothy, coming up on May 4th, and I'm going to try to dig deeper into some of the speakers that you had at the Energy Summit. I'm going to try to talk to Jeff Mark and see what great things Missouri is doing around energy efficiency that we could emulate. So Dave's given me the hurry-up sign, so I'm going to have to say thank you very much for being on, Dorothy.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Okay.
Here's the calendar for the week of 3/16. Tuesday, March 17th, 6:30 p.m., the Blue River documentary screening and Blue River report card will be at the Discovery Center, 4750 Troost, Kansas City, Missouri. The Blue River was here before we built the Kansas City Metro. This film will share its secret story with you. On Thursday, March 19th, there may be Extinction Rebellion KC Chapter Meeting, 6:30 p.m. at St. Mark Hope and Peace Lutheran, 38th and Troost, Kansas City, Missouri. Extinction Rebellion KC meeting entrance is on the Mannheim side of the church. New members are welcome. Check their Facebook. There may be events at Anita B. Gorman Discovery Center. Go to kcregion@mdc.mo.gov for information. Please listen to Eco Radio KC next week. You're sure to hear good radio with vital news about our environment. These items and more can be viewed on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page. Stay tuned now for Fiesta Musical.
Not to worry, your tap water is safe from the coronavirus. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Access to running water for hand washing is essential to slowing the spread of the coronavirus, COVID-19. But as ProPublica reports, in Washington State, some utilities serving the epicenter of the pandemic in the U.S. have not committed to halting water shutoffs for customers with delinquent accounts.
Each of the more than 150,000 water utilities across the country will face the same dilemma, whether to forego shutoffs until the crisis eases.
More than a dozen members of Congress urged the federal government to work with local and state leaders to institute a national moratorium on cutting off customers and restoring service for any disconnected households.
Many people have jammed stores, buying up bottled water, among other items. However, current treatment methods for tap water are expected to be effective against the virus.
The World Health Organization said in a brief that COVID-19 has not been detected in drinking water supplies, and based on current evidence, the risk is low.
The WHO also stated that conventional centralized water treatment methods, which utilize filtration and disinfection, should inactivate the coronavirus.
And the Environmental Protection Agency is recommending that people continue to drink tap water. The agency's regulations require treatment by public water systems to remove or kill pathogens, including viruses.
Dissolved organic carbon, or DOC, occurs naturally in groundwater and comes from decomposing plants and animals. But the higher its concentration, the more difficult and expensive it is to make groundwater drinkable.
A recent study from the University of New South Wales concludes that half of the world's population faces a threat from increased DOCs because of climate change and urbanization.
One of the researchers said they found increases in concentration of DOCs in groundwater of up to 45%, largely because of hotter temperatures during the wettest 3 months of the year.
The scientists say they also expect urbanization to increase groundwater DOC concentrations by almost 20%, likely from leaking septic and sewer systems.
An increase in groundwater DOC concentration impacts the ability and the cost to make groundwater drinkable, according to lead study author Liza McDonough. The effects could be significant. In a number of southeastern states in the U.S., for example, increases in DOCs could raise water costs for a family of four by more than $130 per year.
The Navajo Generating Station, a few miles east of Page, Arizona, began producing electricity from coal in the 1970s. According to NBC News, the power plant operations slurped up 32,000 acre-feet of Colorado River water per year for pollution control and cooling.
One of the main buyers of power from the Navajo was Los Angeles, about 500 miles away. But the plant ended operations late last year because it was no longer economically viable.
Now, according to Cronkite News, LA is still looking to the Navajo to provide electricity, not from coal, but from wind and solar. The city council recently approved a 30-day feasibility study to assess the potential costs and benefits.
The tribe has two solar energy projects generating 55 megawatts of clean energy, providing both revenue and electricity for the Navajo, with plans to expand further.
The Dry Lake Wind Power Project has been operational since 2009 and plans a large expansion.
According to the news site Earther, the Navajo Nation is missing some $40 million in revenue since the coal plant shut down, and if its partnership with Los Angeles succeeds, the tribe hopes it can eventually supply energy to neighboring New Mexico and Nevada.
Young shore crabs change their shell color to blend in with the rocky environment where they live.
However, a recent study shows that prolonged exposure to the sound of ships weakens the juvenile crab's camouflaging powers and leaves them more open to attack from predators.
Emily Carter at the University of Exeter placed dark-shelled juvenile shore crabs into white tanks where they were exposed to the underwater sounds of ships.
Other crabs listened to natural water sounds, played either quietly or loudly at a similar level to the ship noise.
Over 8 weeks, the crabs exposed to ship noise lightened their color to match their tanks, only half as much as those which heard ambient water alone.
Carter believes this reduced change in color is caused by stress from the effects of ship noise pollution, which either drains the crabs of energy required to change color properly or disrupts the balance of hormones necessary to camouflage.
The study also showed that when crabs were subjected to a simulated bird attack, those that heard the ship noise didn't run and hide as they normally would.
And finally, tree hoppers are possibly the most astonishing little insects you've never heard of. The bugs have bizarre helmet-like structures that look like horns or antlers and come in a variety of colors and strange shapes.
Tree hoppers slurp sap by piercing plants with their sharp mouths and sing to each other by vibrating plant stems. They are a vital part of their forest ecosystems.
They're also an entomologist's dream, if you ask Brendan Morris, a grad student at the University of Illinois. He's smitten with the bugs and thinks they've never gotten their due respect.
Recently, Morris studied some yet-to-be-identified treehopper specimens and came across a darkish purple and red one with two horns jutting out the top.
It was love at first sight.
He told WBEZ Chicago this particular tree hopper had just a wacky fashion sense about it. And to draw attention to the new species, he named it after Lady Gaga, who herself has a unique flamboyant shape-shifting style.
The original specimen came from a forest in Nicaragua, and Morris is there now to see if he can find any Lady Gaga tree hoppers still living in the same area.
According to a university press release, the insect is a new genus of tree hopper and now officially known as Kaikaya gaga.
That's it for this week in water. We'll see you next time.